Chapter 8. Course of his wild career and now put it on the fire. While Meg, seating the child in a warm corner, knelt down on the ground before her, and pulled off her shoes, and dried her wet feet on a cloth. Eh, and she laughed at Trotty too so pleasantly, so cheerfully, that Trotty could have blessed her where she kneeled, for he had seen that, when they entered, she was sitting by the fire in tears. Why, father, said Meg. You're crazy tonight, I think. I don't know what the bells would say to that. Poor little feet. How cold they are. Oh, they're warmer now. Exclaimed the child. They're quite warm now. Said Meg. We haven't rubbed them half enough. We're so busy. And when they're done, we'll brush out the damp hair. And when that's done, we'll bring some color to the poor pale face with fresh water. And when that's done, we'll be so gay, and brisk, and happy. The child, in a burst of sobbing, clasped her round the neck, caressed her fair cheek with its hand, and said, Oh Meg, oh dear Meg. Toby's blessing could have done no more. Who could do more? Why, father. Cried Meg, after a pause. Here I am, and here I go, my dear. Said Trotty. Good gracious me. Cried Meg. He's crazy. He's put the dear child's bonnet on the kettle, and hung the lid behind the door. I didn't go for to do it, my love. Said Trotty, hastily repairing this mistake. Meg, my dear? Meg looked towards him, and saw that he had elaborately stationed himself behind the chair of their male visitor, where with many mysterious gestures he was holding up the sixpence he had earned. I see, my dear, said Trotty, as I was coming in, half an ounce of tea lying somewhere on the stairs, and I'm pretty sure there was a bit of bacon too. As I don't remember where it was exactly, I'll go myself and try to find them. With this inscrutable artifice, Toby withdrew to purchase the viands he had spoken of, for ready money, at Mrs. Chickenstalker's, and presently came back, pretending he had not been able to find them, at first, in the dark. But here they are at last, said Trotty, setting out the tea things, all correct. I was pretty sure it was tea, and a rasher. So it is. Meg, my pet, if you'll just make the tea, while your unworthy father toasts the bacon, we shall be ready, immediate. It's a curious circumstance, said Trotty, proceeding in his cookery, with the assistance of the toasting fork. Curious, but well known to my friends, that I never care, myself, for rashers, nor for tea. I like to see other people enjoy 'em, said Trotty, speaking very loud, to impress the fact upon his guest, but to me, as food, they're disagreeable. Yet Trotty sniffed the savor of the hissing bacon, ah, as if he liked it, and when he poured the boiling water in the teapot, looked lovingly down into the depths of that snug cauldron, and suffered the fragrant steam to curl about his nose, and wreathe his head and face in a thick cloud. However, for all this, he neither ate nor drank, except at the very beginning, a mere morsel for form's sake, which he appeared to eat with infinite relish, but declared was perfectly uninteresting to him. No. Trotty's occupation was, to see Will Fern and Lillian eat and drink, and so was Meg's. And never did spectators at a city dinner or court banquet find such high delight in seeing others feast, although it were a monarch or a pope, as those two did, in looking on that night. Meg smiled at Trotty, Trotty laughed at Meg. Meg shook her head, and made belief to clap her hands, applauding Trotty. Trotty conveyed, in dumb show, unintelligible narratives of how and when and where he had found their visitors. To Meg, and they were happy, very happy. Although, thought Trotty, sorrowfully, as he watched Meg's face, that match is broken off, I see. Apostrophe apostrophe. Now, I'll tell you what, apostrophe said Trotty after tea. The little one, she sleeps with Meg, I know. Apostrophe, with good Meg. Apostrophe apostrophe cried the child, caressing her. With Meg. Apostrophe, that's right, apostrophe said Trotty. And I shouldn't wonder if she kiss Meg's father, won't she? I'm Meg's father. Apostrophe, mightily delighted Trotty was, when the child went timidly towards him, and having kissed him, fell back upon Meg again. She's as sensible as Solomon, apostrophe said Trotty. Here we come, and here we know, we don't I don't mean, that I what was I saying, Meg, my precious? Apostrophe apostrophe, Meg looked towards their guest, who leaned upon her chair, and with his face turned from her, fondled the child's head, half hidden in her lap. To be sure, apostrophe said Toby. To be sure. I don't know what I'm rambling on about, tonight. My wits are wool gathering, I think. Will Fern, you come along with me. You're tired to death, and broken down for want of rest. You come along with me. Apostrophe the man still played with the child's curls, still leaned upon Meg's chair, still turned away his face. He didn't speak, but in his rough coarse fingers, clenching, and expanding in the fair hair of the child, there was an eloquence that said enough. Yes, yes, apostrophe said Trotty, answering unconsciously what he saw expressed in his daughter's face. Take her with you, Meg. Get her to bed. There. Now, Will, I'll show you where you lie. It's not much of a place. Only a loft. But, having a loft, I always say, is one of the great conveniences of living in a mews. And till his coach house and stable gets a better let, we live here cheap. There's plenty of sweet hay up there, belonging to a neighbor. And it's as clean as hands, and Meg can make it. Cheer up. Don't give way. A new heart for a new year, always. Apostrophe, the hand released from the child's hair, had fallen, trembling, into Trotty's hand. So Trotty, talking without intermission, let him out as tenderly and easily, as if he had been a child himself. Returning before Meg, he listened for an instant at the door of her little chamber, an adjoining room. The child was murmuring a simple prayer, before lying down to sleep, and when she had remembered Meg's name, dearly, dearly so her words ran, Trotty heard her stop, and ask for his. It was some short time before the foolish little old fellow could compose himself to mend the fire, and draw his chair to the warm hearth. But, when he had done so, and had trimmed the light, he took his newspaper from his pocket, and began to read. Carelessly at first, and skimming up and down the columns, but with an earnest and a sad attention, very soon. For this same dreaded paper redirected Trotty's thoughts into the channel they had taken all that day, and which the day's events had so marked out and shaped. His interest in the two wanderers had set him on another course of thinking, and a happier one, for the time. But being alone again, and reading of the crimes and violences of the people, he relapsed into his former train. In this mood, he came to an account, and it was not the first he had ever read, of a woman who had laid her desperate hands, not only on her own life, but on that of her young child. A crime so terrible, and so revolting to his soul, dilated with the love of Meg, that he let the journal drop, and fell back in his chair, appalled. Unnatural and cruel. Apostrophe apostrophe Toby cried. Unnatural and cruel. None but people who were bad at heart, born bad, who had no business on the earth, could do such deeds. It's too true, all I've heard today, too just, too full of proof. We're bad. Apostrophe, the chimes took up the words so suddenly burst out so loud, and clear, and sonorous that the bell seemed to strike him in his chair. And what was that, they said. Toby Veck, waiting for you Toby. Toby Veck, waiting for you Toby. Come and see us, come and see us, drag him to us, drag him to us, haunt and hunt him, break his slumbers. Break his slumbers. Toby Vec, door open wide Toby Vec, door open wide Toby apostrophe then fiercely back to their impetuous strain again, and ringing in the very bricks and plaster on the walls. Toby listened. Fancy. His remorse for having run away from them that afternoon. No. Nothing of the kind. Again, and yet a dozen times again. Haunt and hunt him, drag him to us. Apostrophe, deafening the whole town. Meg, apostrophe said Trotty softly, tapping at her door. Do you hear anything? Apostrophe, I hear the bells, father. Surely they're very loud tonight. Apostrophe, is she asleep? Apostrophe, said Toby, making an excuse for peeping in. So peacefully and happily. I can't leave her yet though, father. Look how she holds my hand. Apostrophe, Meg, apostrophe whispered Trotty. Listen to the bells. Apostrophe, she listened, with her face towards him all the time. But it underwent no change. She didn't understand them. Trotty withdrew, resumed his seat by the fire, and once more listened by himself. He remained here a little time. It was impossible to bear it, their energy was dreadful. If the tower door is really open, apostrophe said Toby, hastily laying aside his apron, but never thinking of his hat, what's to hinder me from going up into the steeple and satisfying myself? If it's shut, I don't want any other satisfaction. That's enough. Apostrophe, he was pretty certain as he slipped out quietly into the street, that he should find it shut and locked, for he knew the door well, and had so rarely seen it open, that he couldn't reckon above 3 times in all. It was a low arched portal, outside the church, in a dark nook behind a column, and had such great iron hinges, and such a monstrous lock, that there was more hinge and lock than door. But what was his astonishment when, coming bareheaded to the church, and putting his hand into this dark nook, with a certain misgiving that it might be unexpectedly seized, and a shivering propensity to draw it back again, he found that the door, which opened outwards, actually stood ajar. He thought, on the first surprise, of going back, or of getting a light, or a companion, but his courage aided him immediately, and he determined to ascend alone. What have I to fear? Apostrophe said Trotty. It's a church. Besides, the ringers may be there, and have forgotten to shut the door. Apostrophe so he went in, feeling his way as he went, like a blind man, for it was very dark, and very quiet, for the chimes were silent. The dust from the street had blown into the recess, and lying there, heaped up, made it so soft and velvet-like to the foot that there was something startling, even in that. The narrow stair was so close to the door too, that he stumbled at the very first, and shutting the door upon himself, by striking it with his foot and causing it to rebound back heavily, he couldn't open it again. This was another reason, however, for going on. Trotty groped his way and went on. Up, and round, and up, higher up. It was a disagreeable staircase for that groping work, so low and narrow that his groping hand was always touching something, and it often felt so like a man or ghostly figure standing up erect and making room for him to pass without discovery, that he would rub the smooth wall upward searching for its face, and downward searching for its feet, while a chill tingling crept all over him. Twice or thrice, a door niche broke the monotonous surface, and then it seemed a gap as wide as the whole church, and he felt on the brink of an abyss, and going to tumble headlong down, until he found the wall again. Still up, and round, and up, higher up. At length, the dull and stifling atmosphere began to freshen. Presently to feel quite windy. Presently it blew so strong that he could hardly keep his legs. But he got to an arched window in the tower, breast high, and holding tight, looked down upon the housetops, on the smoking chimneys, on the blur and blotch of lights, towards the place where Meg was wondering where he was, and calling to him perhaps, all kneaded up together in a leaven of mist and darkness. This was the belfry, where the ringers came. He had caught hold of one of the frayed ropes which hung down through apertures in the oaken roof. At first he started, thinking it was air, then trembled at the very thought of waking the deep bell. The bells themselves were higher. Higher, Trotty, in his fascination, or in working out the spell upon him, groped his way. By ladders now, and toilsomely, for it was steep, and not too certain holding for the feet. Up, 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 and climb and clamber, up, 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 higher, higher, higher up. Until, ascending through the floor, and pausing with his head just raised above its beams, he came among the bells. It was barely possible to make out their great shapes in the gloom, but there they were, shadowy, and dark, and dumb. A heavy sense of dread and loneliness fell instantly upon him, as he climbed into this airy nest of stone and metal. His head went round and round. He listened, and then raised a wild holloa. Apostrophe holloa, was mournfully protracted by the echoes. Giddy, confused, and out of breath, and frightened, Toby looked about him vacantly, and sunk down in a swoon. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.